Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat. Welcome to One and All. We're here with Kirk and JB. I did notice that there was the notification there was no new observation show today. We tried. We started. Scott was ready. We're going to actually record it on Monday. I had an issue, which was that I've been out of touch in terms of my primary email for a week, and not only me, but my entire family, our primary email went down. We couldn't send, we couldn't receive, and it really puts you in a very difficult spot in today's world. It's the primary way of communicating, and so even though I had contacted them many times, my time with Google, which is my mail server, finally came up about 15 minutes before the show, and during the show, I was trying to deal with that guy on a in a chat basis and do the show, and I was doing neither justice. So since I had my whole family upset with me, and Scott says, hey, you know, why don't we just postpone to Monday? We said, and that is the answer to that question. But if you ever get sent a notification of you want to continue to use this domain, and most of my emails are on private domains as opposed to public domain, you have to respond to them. And my problem was that they were being sent to an email address that I'd once owned, but for some reason it slipped out of the group, and somebody else bought it and wasn't forwarding mail. So when they asked me to acknowledge it and verify that it was me and I was still using it, I couldn't respond, and they removed the all of the settings. So I was in the dark for a week. Not a good experience. I did see, though, that on the news today that the Trumpster has decided to increase the U.S. military spending to $720 billion if you combine that with the three major agencies of intelligence, which is military spying. That's $1 trillion a year. Of course, that is more than every other nation on Earth combined. The excuse was, we're just trying to stay ahead of and competitive with China and Russia. China and
Russia.
Spending
what, about a tenth of that?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, combined.
I mean, it's amazing that they can say such drivel like that, and nobody challenges them. But it's not patriotic to challenge the president on military spending, so no one seems to be willing to do it. And therefore, now in a world where the liberals have recognized that a big military serves their interest, there is no antagonist for it. And, you know, our voices are way too quiet to matter to them. But I was just astonished that here we are, all we, and you know, the most amazing thing, it's not just that, you know, it's $1 trillion squandered every year, and that we, on the Afghan and Iraqi wars, between all the legacy payments and the VA payments, we squandered $5 trillion. Instead, all we've done with our military for the last, 50 years is make bad situations worse. We don't have a single success with our military in the last 50 years. And we have some god-awful failures, some of the worst failures in human history. I do not get it. But, I think patriotism is a lot like religion.
Mm-hmm.
There's no thinking involved.
Right.
It's a knee-jerk reaction. People don't care. You could tell them, how many people I've told that Paul admitted to being demon-possessed and doesn't even faze them. You tell somebody, how in the world could you believe the Christian New Testament when the 13 letters written by Paul and Acts, which comprise half of it, they said inspired them? And how is that even possible? Remotely. And it doesn't faze them.
Never mind. Think about the guy who snores.
Yeah, just the guy. The guy who snores from our last program. I want to pick back up in the conversation. This would be the first conversation that Yahweh had with Abram. We're going to go through each thing that Yahweh said to Abram and everything that Abram replied back to Yahweh, because they are the things that enabled Abram to become a part of the covenant. Kirk, you've got a pretty good relationship with our Heavenly Father, don't you?
Yeah, I hope so. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I believe so.
Okay. Would you think that that you'd be in his top 10 list, a notch above Abram?
No.
No. I think you maybe are above Yishak or Jacob.
No.
No. Okay. I wouldn't put myself in the top 1,000 list, much less the top 10 list. So if these things were required of Abraham, whom God chose to be the first person that's part of his covenant, do you think that you could sneak in, with kind of a lesser effort?
Absolutely not.
Because if you didn't at least acknowledge what and accept what Abram did, what do you think the chances are that you'd be accepted by Yahweh? You think he'd cut you a special deal?
Absolutely zero.
Yeah, that's my view, too. Absolutely zero. If this is what was required of Abram, and it was presented for our benefit, which is the only reason to do it, because why memorialize this conversation with Abram 600 years after it occurred if it wasn't for our benefit?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly wasn't for his benefit.
No, he was there.
Yeah.
Religious act as though God was just trying to pad the length of the book.
Okay.
We're running a little short here on pages. I promised the publishers I'd get it up to 2,000. I got to throw something in.
Yeah, throw something in. I'll just throw
this
story
in. Filler material.
Yeah. So, any way you look at it, the story is only told for our benefit, not for Abram's benefit. And there is no way that any one of us is going to be closer to Yahweh, more important to Yahweh than Abram. Job was closer to him, but he's not in our immediate circle here. And no one's going to be at that league, that kind of level in terms of relationship. And so God's not going to cut us a special deal. We better pay attention to what Yahweh asked of Abram and to everything that he did. So I'm going to begin with Barbara Sheath in the beginning, Genesis 12:1. I've still got the cough. I'm sorry about that. I did read today in several news sources. It's just the flu, which is, I had the flu back in, November. And this is the nasal infection and drip is the irritating. My throat is simply a byproduct of that. I feel 100%. I have got no issues other than this nagging cough. And I'm getting the antibiotics for it and other things. Goodness gracious. But I did realize that, I did read that this is the worst flu season in decades. So I'm not alone in having suffered from it. Now, Yahweh. Now, it's one of the most amazing things is, there are a gazillion people that would argue with you and say, that it wasn't Yahweh that talked with Abram. He knew, God by a different name. What does this say? Now Yahweh.
Now Yahweh.
Yeah. It doesn't say now Yosha. It doesn't say now Moses. It doesn't say Elijah. It doesn't say Baal. It doesn't say the Lord.
Say Lord.
It's now Yahweh. Clear as day. Said to Amar. Spoke to. And it's just Amar El. Asked God to. Called him perfect. Genuinely and literally with ongoing implications. Abram. Which means father who lifts up, increases, rises, and grows. It is for you, of your own free will, to approach by walking away from. And we're going to get the three things he's being asked to walk away from and the thing he's being asked to walk towards. You guys have both translated you. Halak. Primary meaning, of course, is to walk. And what else does halak mean?
A travel
journey
path.
Travel.
Yeah.
Traveling. Journey travel path. Conduct one's conduct through life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Law means the preposition, it means to or toward, concerning something. Ata is a, it just means you, and men means from, away from. So, you know, the only thing here that could be controversial is that there are occasions when the imperative mood, and this was written in the imperative mood, can be a command. I don't think I've come across one yet. And even all of the grammatical tools will all say that, well, it's primarily an expression of second-person volition. Well, who's second person here?
The one who's doing the walking.
Yeah, that's right. Abram. So second-person volition means God is saying, it's your choice. I'm not going to force you. This is not a command. It's your choice. Of your own free will. You can choose to do this or not, but I'm offering this to you, and it's got to be your own desire. So it is for you, of your own free will, to approach by walking away from. All right. Here's the list of three things. Eretz Ata. Eretz means country, land, world, realm, territory, any of those things. In this particular case, geography didn't seem to be an issue because, well, he was already a long, long, long journey geographically from Ur of Suma, of the Chaldeans of Babylon. So we're not talking about land here. And the fact that Moshe walked away from it already, and I mean Abraham walked away from it already. We're not, you know, this God's not saying, you know, I want to put physical distance between you and that place. And the very fact that, you know, I was talking to him when he's in Haran about this, this has nothing to do with geography. You know, some people say, well, how do I walk away from my country? And if I walk away from it and go to a different country, then how do I walk away from that country? And is it a never-ending cycle?
Mm-hmm.
You know. Come on, folks. Sometimes, you know,
you can still reside there and walk away from it.
That is correct. It's disassociate from. You know, it's people who are political, patriotic, pro-military, who vote, who engage in politics, who support one politician over the other, they're still associated with their country. That's why I see somebody that, you know, saying, wow, you know, Trump is great at this or that, or I'm pro-Bernie, or I'm pro-troops, I'm pro-police, any of those kind of things. They say, well, then you really haven't walked away from your country yet. You're still playing good. Yeah, salute the flag, pledge allegiance, start, you know, the national anthem, singing it, standing, showing reverence for it, any of those things are showing an affinity for your country. And that's what God is saying, don't do. No. I've also had a lot of people write and say, well, what about Social Security? You know, I finally retired, I need my Social Security. You know, Social Security is an economic thing. You paid into it, you know, hopefully you get some of what you paid in back. You know, I don't have an issue with somebody receiving Social Security. I would say that if you're capable of working and you're not working, and you've chosen to be wholly dependent on the government economically for no reason that it's just easy and you're lazy, then I would have a problem with that. But, you know, if age or disability or circumstance in life has put you in a position where for some time you need to take advantage of those things, then by all means, we've certainly paid for them. So, and I at least that's my interpretation. Others might have a different view of it. But this is pretty clear. You've got to walk away from your country. The second is, walk away from Moledeth. Moledeth is your society, your culture, and community, your relatives and relationships, the people with whom you identify and their customs, circumcising yourself from your origins and kindred souls, your people and place of nativity. It's from Mul and Ed. Mul is to circumcise, to separate, and Ed, and also Yalid, is to ward off and to separate oneself from opposing oaths which eternally cut off and separate children who are born blemished and in pain. That was my analysis of it, and, you know, that's not an easy word. It's not used very often. So this is a word where I think everybody is entitled to, you know, to chime in and say, you know, I came to a different conclusion. But my conclusion is it's not just national issues, voting, politics, patriotism. It's you know, pledges of allegiance, that sort of thing. It's to disassociate from the culture, the community, the society. That's what I think when Yahweh says, you know, the ways of the Gentiles are things that we ought not partake in. We ought not emulate their ways. So, you guys to study that word, do you come to a different conclusion?
Not really. If you're down south, you know, that's the best example, because it is so enculturated with religion and patriotism and, well, it's just a way of life. You can't function down there. I mean, I could live down there a heck of a lot cheaper than California, but I don't know that I could live there. And I have relatives, tons of them. I wouldn't know who would we talk to. I mean, after one conversation, they would say, go away.
I tried living in, not living, but I spent a lot of time in Texas when my son was down there, and it was not impossible. It's just not impossible. They're so patriotic, so pro-military, and so overtly religious. And there's a lot of places that are that way. And even here, as I spend a lot of time in southwestern Ohio, it's a hotbed of Roman Catholicism and churchiosity. It's a place that's like, you know, 20 years behind the rest of the country. It's, of course, greatest claim to fame is that it's the heroin and the fentanyl capital of the world. That's not fentanyl capital of the world. So that's not a good thing, of course. More deaths from heroin and fentanyl overdoses here than any other place. But it's also the most religious place probably in the country, certainly north of the Mason-Dixon line. And there's mega churches everywhere. And so it's really tough on me. I just have so much difficulty with all that. And then, of course, here we
to become a bit of a recluse.
You do. Yeah, and here we have a huge Islamic center. And we got Muslims walking around every place. And, you know, in particular the women in their religious dress-up. And it just makes me want to puke. And, you know, for those that are listening and say, you know, that's pejorative and, you know, it's not accepting, it's intolerant, and how could you say that? Because I don't think there's anyone
on the planet
that understands. I don't think there's anyone on the planet that understands the religion of Islam better than I do.
It's not accepting. It's not tolerant. You're right. It's right. I'm not accepting, and I'm not tolerant.
I'm not tolerant. That is correct. Yeah. Read Prophet of Doom if you've got a hard time with that. Muhammad was a sexual pervert. He was involved in incest, pedophilia, rape, and for a woman to play religious dress up to a rapist and pedophile. Screams stupid. And so, it bothers me. But I don't like to see any religious dress-up of any kind. It's just that the Islamic variety is particularly
steroids,
in my view, yes. So this is your society, your culture, your community. Disassociate from those things because it's the way of the Gentiles. And this is what you would call, this would be the way of the Gentiles. It's the clearest way we can say this. And God repeatedly says, do not emulate the ways of the Gentiles.
Boy, yeah.
So circumcise yourself from them. That, you know, that mul is the middle of this, the first four letters, mul. Circumcise yourself from this. You know, it's like circumcision. Circumcision, you know, it's a very minor act, and it's 5% physical, 95% symbolic. Mm-hmm. You know, can you go to a movie? Sure. You know, would I go to a movie that glorifies like American Sniper? Hell no. Would I go to a movie like Three Billboards Outside of whatever the town is? Absolutely. You know, I'll go see La La Land and be entertained for an hour. You know, my son loves Star Wars. I'll go see it. I'm not really as up on Star Wars because the Force is way too similar to Kabbalah for my taste, so it kind of bothers me. But, you know, it doesn't mean that. It means that there are aspects of the culture, holidays, that are cultural holidays. Don't participate in them. Don't celebrate Veterans Day and Memorial Day and the 4th of July and that sort of thing. So I think that's what God is talking about in this particular case. You know, and you know, he's not asking for perfection. And we can't even approach perfection in these things. Yeah, but it's a mindset. It's a perspective. It's a mindset. If you have the right attitude towards what God's asking here, I think that's really all he's asking.
Mm-hmm.
And also from your father's household. Now, this one also has to be symbolic. And what I think it means, and again, I'm not claiming that I have all the right answers here. You're more than welcome to disagree. But what I think this means is that, you know, can you visit with mom and dad? Yeah, if you have young children and your parents are wanting to babysit, wonderful. You know, if you're just starting out and you've got some hiccups and you need mom and dad's help, I got no issue with that. I don't think God's got any issue with that. I think what he's saying is, you want to be part of the family of man or do you want to be part of my family?
Mm-hmm. Prioritize.
Yeah, prioritize here. What do you want to be? You know, it's like when Yahweh says way early in the book of Bereshit that a man and woman will leave their father's home and become a, you know, their own family. And I think that's what he's saying is part of the covenant. Do you want to be part of my covenant, or you just want to stay as part of the family of man? You know, take your pick. So again, I think
this is kind of the answer to those who, you know, will read yada yada, read Introduction to God or Observations, and be like, you know, this all makes sense, but I just can't accept that my, you know, mother or father who passed away is, you know, not right. going to be in heaven, so I'm going to reject it. That, to me, that's what this is addressing. You know, leave that behind. Be willing to accept that, yeah, they're probably not, but don't let that keep you out.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's a very extraordinarily valid point. So it's because what we find is that there are a number of reasons that people are religious. You know, one is they just want to get along in the society. And if you're not part of the religion, well, we talked about the South, you're ostracized. Some people do it because they're afraid of hell. Other people do it because they just don't have any backbone. Other people do it because they were raised in it and have never thought otherwise. I mean, there's so many reasons to do it, but one of the big reasons is I'm afraid of death, or I can't imagine that, you know, that the loss of my mother, my father, my brother, sister, son, daughter, that I will never see them again. And so even though it's false hope, the false hope of thinking and believing you're going to see them again causes a lot of people to be religious. The fear of what happens after death and of the loss of contact with the individual. So you're right. That's
I have to resolve that personally very early. Because I thought to myself, well, first of all, it was their job to tell me. I would have told them that they were still alive when I found out, but it was their job to tell me, not my job to tell them as the child.
That's correct.
Number two, they are not being punished. I won't see them again, but
Yah
is choosing his own family, and they didn't choose him, so he has a right to choose his own. Now, you want to join that, or you want to just disappear?
Easy call on that. Sorry, there's nothing you can do.
When I first came across all this is when me and Patty were first dating, and she had just lost her dad, and so she was struggling a lot with that. But when I put it to her, I was like, look at it like this. If he isn't in heaven, do you think he wants you to be where he is?
Yeah.
Or do you think he would want you to do the right thing and, you know, come to know God? If he messed up, he wouldn't want you to continue his mistakes.
That's correct. Beautifully stated. Correct.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, since there is nothing we can do about those who are gone, and if they are, you know, if they spent their life here on earth promoting the religion as a religious leader, promoting politics as a political leader, promoting the military as a military leader, they're in trouble. The likelihood is they're in Sheol. And you most certainly don't want to follow them there. Yeah, you'd be able to see them again, but not under conditions that even they would, under any circumstance, want to see you again. And if they were victims of religion, victims of politics, it kind of went along with the flow, then
there's
they exist in your memory.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's it.
Yeah.
They exist in your memory. And you'll never see them again. They'll never see you again. They're not being punished. They're not being rewarded. And just as you said, what do you, as JB said, what do you think they would want? And if, and while that's important to, for someone in Patty's position, the reality is you can't do anything to fix what's gone.
Yeah.
What's already determined and over. What is the best for you? And what is going to be the best for your children?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's really all that should matter. No, once you've taken care of yourself and your children, your family, then you know you can. If other people outside of your family are interested, then share with them. Now, then this goes to beyond just walking away from these three things, disassociating from them, to add to the land which bestows the blessings of the relationship that I will show you, and this is Asher, which provides the benefits of an upright, fortuitous, and elevated state, a joyful and happy attitude, an encouraged and consistent mindset to those walking the correct way along the proper and specific path to a prosperous life, stepping out with regard to this teaching and guidance to pursue life the right way. So, and it's which Yahweh will show you. Yahweh has shown all of us the promised land. And again, while with Abram, he would actually go to the promised land. It wasn't even the promised land when he was there. It was the world of the Canaanites when he was there. The Canaanites were disgusting. It didn't become Yisrael until his grandson was an adult. So it was the land of the Canaanites at that time, and he doesn't want us to go to the land of the Canaanites. So it's the land that Yahweh is going to show us. And as such, we're also looking at this symbolically, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at this as the land he's going to show us. That's the promised land. What does Yisrael represent? It represents Sukkah. It represents Eden. It represents coming together again with God. It represents heaven. It represents being with God and camping out with Him. That's what the promised land represents. That's the land that He has showed us, the realm that He has showed us. So I don't think this is telling any of us that we should pack up our bags and go to what right now is one of the most polluted places on earth, Yisrael.
That's like walking into Babylon now.
Yeah, it is. I think it's, you know, the land that he has shown us. He's shown us Eden.
Mm-hmm.
He's shown us Yisrael as he intends it to be. He has shown us Sukkah. I think that's what he is speaking of here.
Yes, sir. Has to be.
So I think we can meet this condition that way. Now, I will show you, which is I will reveal, make known to you with the hifl stem, the subject, Yahweh, and enables the object, Abram, to participate in the action as a secondary subject along with him. So you're, that Abraham will ultimately see the land as Yahweh does. The imperfect denotes ongoing consequences throughout time, and the jussive is an expression of third-person volition, and thus associating a will and desire with the land itself, personifying the land. An amazing start, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very clear.
Now, yeah, now, did God
say... We have some gray areas, but I find it extremely clear.
Did God say as a prerequisite the thing that Billy Graham would say, which is first you have to confess your sins? Did he say repent?
No.
Did he give him four spiritual laws?
No, not even the prophet.
Did he say you have to pray this profession of faith?
No, sir.
Get on your knees. Come up here and bow your head.
Bow your head and close
up front.
No.
Sign this pledge card. Attend church. Worship me. Even love me. Praise me. Pray to me. Did any one of those things make this their initial list?
I'm laughing at me. Because I've been there for so long.
And by the way, you know, we're never going to get to any of those things. None of those things. You know, everything that makes Christianity what it is. Now, of course, you know, in Islam, did he ask anybody to be a jihadist? No. Did he ask anybody to rape and pillage? No. Did he, prerequisites, you know, is it, you know, profession of faith to Allah and Muhammad? No. Five prostrations a day? No. Of course, it's nothing to do with Islam. But Christianity, which carries around this part of the book, there is nothing here that coincides with any aspect of the Christian faith. Nothing. And it never will. We're not going to cover anything that that does that.
Well,
then God says, "I will engage on your behalf." I'd like that. I'm going to engage on your behalf, continually acting to make for you a greatly empowered community comprised of every race. I will kneel down in love to bless you, lifting you up. And I will cause, as an expression of my will, your name to continuously grow in importance so that you come to exist as a blessing. Yeah, I like that. Hello, I'm God. Here's the things that I want from you. This is my prerequisite for engaging in a relationship. And oh, by the way, just for starts, here's what I'm going to do for you. I am God, the creator of the universe. I'm going to engage on your behalf. I'm going to act on your behalf. And I'm going to create a greatly empowered community comprised of every race. Well, that would be the covenant family. That's the greatly empowered community. And then I'm going to kneel down to bless you, lifting you up. God gets on his knees to lift us up. He does not want us on our knees to lift him up. We can't lift him up. He can lift us up. And I will cause, as an expression of my will, your name to continuously grow in importance. His name only grows in importance if you know what his name means.
Mm-hmm.
Or Father who lifts up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I dare say it's not even important until you have it couched in this conversation, this covenant family relationship. I mean, there's no reason to tell the story other than that.
Right.
So,
yeah, then his name...
That's what he wants you to remember.
Right. Is an expression of Yahweh's will only in conjunction with the fact that it expresses who Yahweh is and what his intent is, what his will is in the covenant. What's Yahweh's will in the covenant? To get down on his knees, to lift us up, to empower us is Yahweh's will in the covenant, and Abraham's name conveys that. So, let's look at each word here. The first word is Asha. Asha means engage, acting. relationship takes both parties to engage and act. Yahweh is engaging and acting on our behalf. Call consistently, expend the energy to create for you. And this was call imperfect, literally, genuinely, as part of the relationship on a continual basis. Facilitate. I don't know how what you can say about a Shah. I mean, you could render it as do, then I will do, but doesn't read well when you follow. So I will engage on your behalf, continually acting to make for you. And that's what God is asking us to do, by the way, in return. He wants us to engage and act based upon the terms and conditions of the covenant. Gadol means remarkable, awesome, important, outstanding, distinguished, magnanimous, amplified, substantial, elevated in magnitude. Well, if we're part of the covenant, we're going to be elevated in magnitude from 3.5 dimensions to 7.
Yeah.
We're being greatly empowered.
Yeah.
We become so important that we become sons and daughters of the Almighty. That's about as important as important gets, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Inherit everything he owns.
Do you have any other insights in Gadol?
No, it's pretty straightforward. It's everywhere you go, it's from the adjective to the verbs and so forth. It's Gadol is twisted threads, but that's to tighten something to make it stronger. So that's another increase in size and power. So,
right.
No, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that and increase in dependability too. Something, you know, if you're adding fibers and twisting more fibers into a rope, you just make it more dependable.
Yeah.
So more steadfast, more likely to prevail, right, even under stress. And then we're dealing with goy. So goy means all ethnicities, coming together of people, a gathering of individuals of varying ethnicities, a confluence of different and distinct souls. So clearly the covenant that's being comprised through Abram is not just for Jews.
Well, it
is for everybody.
Abraham ain't Jewish.
No. You know, it was interesting. It was Lisa that brought this to my attention this week, that there is a place in Elijah, I think it's Elijah. It might be Ezekiel, I think. 16th chapter, it comes to mind. Third verse, where it talks about Israel's mother and father. Actually says, you know, one is a Hittite. I think it's Sarah's a Hittite. And that it refers that the father, Abraham, is an Amorite by ethnicity, if you will. I still haven't figured out if this is symbolic, what the meaning is of it. The fact is that Abraham and Sarah, having come from Ur of the Chaldeans, which was the conglomerate that became Babylon,
right,
they most certainly aren't Israelite.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be no nation of people, ethnicity, known as Israel until such time as Jacob comes along.
Now, it could be the line of Shem. We don't know, but it could be the line of Shem. There's a lot of different people.
Are part of that line.
The Tigris and Euphrates, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the line of Shem, which is where you get anti-Semite, could well include Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why it has to be a community comprised of every race.
Yeah, plus the
covenant is available to everybody. Now, that does not mean that, and I think you have to be really careful here, because while goy can be part of the covenant, you can't continue to be goy, a Gentile, and be part of the covenant. Somewhere along the way, you have to disassociate from what it means to be goy, which is estranged from Israel, and accept what it means to be grafted into Israel. So somewhere along the way, those of us who are goy, I haven't gotten back my DNA test yet, so I don't know, But those of us who are goy or have some percentage of goy, we have to jettison that symbolically and accept the idea that we're being grafted into Yisrael.
Well, that should be achieved in Bikurim.
Correct.
Well, I mean, if you're participating, you're participating.
Right.
If you're doing working down the road, the path, and you're celebrating the Moed Mikros, then it's done on that day, if nothing else, the first time. But it is the ministry of grace, the terms and conditions. So.
But anybody that would squawk and say, oh, this covenant was with Jews, and now that's why we have a New Testament. That's why Paul came along. Well, that would be rubbish, folks. There's only one covenant, and this one was comprised, a community comprised of every race, goy. The next part of this we've covered, but I just want to reiterate it. I think the most profound notion this, in terms of being contrary to human thought about God
Barak.
Is that he wants to get down on his knees to lift us up, Barak. And that he never once asks us to get down on our knees to lift him up. Because he doesn't say things that are stupid. The notion of us getting down on our knees to lift him up is stupid. And if you say, oh, that's symbolic, we're lifting him up in praise. Can you imagine a God that would create a, talk about an insecure moron. I mean, that would, what a pathetic thing to ascribe to God is this being, that supreme being, that would create an inferior being to praise him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just preposterous. And it'll be like a child not saying, hey, daddy or mommy, I love you, but a child saying, you are perfect, you are great, you are the most wonderful mommy and daddy in the history of humankind, and get down on their knees and bow and genuflex and offer sacrifices to you as the greatest and most perfect mommy and daddy in the history of humanity. I mean, it would just, in fact, it would be the opposite of what the role of parent and child is all about. A worthy father or mother gets down on their knees to lift their children up. That's what they do. And a child never gets down on their knees to lift a parent up unless they're really old and crotchety and they've fallen down and had a boo-boo.
Mm-hmm.
So this notion is essential. Don't ever get down on your knees to try to lift God up, because you're countering the prime objective. But God wants to get down on his knees to lift you up. And if you're doing the opposite of what God is intending, you most certainly are not going to endear yourself to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, the letters also don't tell that story. I mean, you've got a breath covenant home. You've got an observant hand and a helping hand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the easiest thing you come up with is a house where an observant man is welcomed. I mean, you can interpret those a little bit different, those different meanings. But regardless, it's a home. You're obviously engaged in all your five senses.
Mm-hmm.
And there's God's hand there to help you. So,
correct.
So, I mean, he would give you a clue if it wasn't so that way.
Bereth, Rosh, Kef, the three letters.
Yeah.
Home, observant individual, and a helping hand.
And a cough, yeah.
Yeah, cough. And I will cause, as an expression of my will, your name to continuously grow in importance. Gadol, Shem, Atah. His name is only important if you know what his name means. His name is only important if you know the context in which his name was used.
Right.
So, since God made this statement, don't you think it's in our interest to figure out, A, what his name means,
mm-hmm.
and understand his context that it was used in? Because God says, it's really important. And, you know, how many people say, I want to do God's will. I want to know God's will for my life. He just told you it as an expression of my will.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to know as an expression, understand and capitalize on how Abram's name, which became Abraham, is important. And you'll be doing God's will. I will equate a high status and honor to your name because it is my desire to raise and rear children through your reputation as an elf, choosing to nurture them, causing them to grow forever. Teal, imperfect, cohortative. Cohortative is an expression of first-person volition. Imperfect is ongoing. Marvelous concept. So that you exist as a blessing, so that you exist as a means of reconciliation, as a promise of prosperity.
You know, I've been studying volition, and he hardly says anything that's not to us.
Right.
You know, everything
well,
is
all the biggies are volitional.
All the biggies, yeah, the 10 statements, all volitional. I mean...
Yeah, he is really big into volition. Well, actually, the imperative mood is only used in one of the 10, which is for the second person volition. You know, speaking to us, it's only used in the one that really needs to be volitional, which is the respecting of one's mother and father. And of course, it's not your earthly mother and father. It's a great place to bring this up, so I'm glad you did, because the instruction can't be to honor your earthly mother and father if he's telling you that to be part of the covenant, you need to walk away from your father's house.
Yeah.
So it should be obvious, and since it's volitional, it's to choose to come to respect and view as significant your heavenly father and spiritual mother.
Which makes much more sense.
Right, right. All 10 are written in the imperfect, which means... you just ought not continue those behaviors. Like, for example, I spent a lot of time in a religious environment. The second one is do not be religious. Just do not do anything that is religious on an ongoing basis. So the moment you stop, you're no longer in violation of it. The third one is don't cause Yahweh's name to be negated in any way. Diminish, negated, become less important. Well,
yeah,
that's a great example.
Over and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, we all did growing up. And so the moment you stop, you're no longer in conflict with the instruction. And, you know, so all it's kind of saying is don't continue to steal. Don't continue to bear false witness. Don't continue to be religious. It makes it really easy for us. So... You look at each element here, and there is nothing here that's tricky in terms of the translation. This is really easy and forthright, what God is offering. I'm going to empower you. I'm going to engage on your behalf. I'm going to lift you up. It's pretty cool when you think about having the creator of the universe working for us. It really is, isn't it?
Oh, we have to. He has to. We're so helpless.
Yeah, he never once he says we have to work for him, but working with him as we grow is a lot of it's a lot of fun. You know, once a child has been lifted up and they've grown and they've got the degree of independence, it's clearly more fun for both the parent and the child to work together. And you know that's what we have the opportunity to do with Yahweh. That's what we should be striving to do. Is coming to the point where we work together. But that's not where we start. We start with, he works for us. And it's pretty cool. You know, people say, I work for God, though. No, well, then you got it wrong. God works for the covenant family. Then he says,
work with God.
Yeah, you can say you work with God. But even then, it would be one in a million that can actually say that that is the case.
Yeah.
Then I will continuously choose to favor and hold in high regard those who hold you in high regard, to see you as a source of blessings, of reconciliation, and of the beneficial covenant. But those who disdain and despise you, even trivialize you, I will actually besmirch as disrespectful and will continually incarcerate as inferior. So with you shall be commended and blessed, reconciled and greeted, all of the people exercising good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes of the earth, of the land, of the earth, of the material realm. Wow, that's a lot too. So God is saying, then, you know, you want to know God's will? I will continually choose to favor. So this was written in the cohortative, which means that it's God's will. It was written in the imperfect, which means that it has ongoing consequences. It was written in the peel stem, where the object, those interacting with Abraham's legacy, become the beneficiary of the blessings. So, I will choose, volitional, to favor, this is based on the verb, abaraka, to hold in high regard. Abaraka. It will be my desire and choice to consistently kneel down in love to greet and welcome. You know, abaraka is obviously based upon barak, and it's the feminine of barak, because it's got the hey at the end of it.
At the end.
Yeah. So he's telling us, I'm going to do this through the Ruach Kodesh. So I will continually choose to favor and hold in high regard. I will choose to welcome in the spirit of reconciliation, always blessing, uplifting, showering with gifts and prosperity, offering as expressions of my will, a beneficial covenant whereby the gift of life is afforded to, marvelous word, a baraka, those who hold you in high regard, those who see you as a source of blessings, of reconciliation, and of the beneficial covenant. This is barak ata. Well, there's a lot of barak here, isn't there? Those who speak favorably of you, those who reconcile their relationship based upon you. So, this is the I will bless those who bless thee.
Mm-hmm.
More what correctly, yeah, I will choose to favor and hold in high regard those who hold you in high regard and who see you as a source of blessings, reconciliation, and the beneficial covenant. So that's the more complete and accurate variation of I will bless those who bless thee. But he who disdains or despises you, even trivializes you, boy, do we have so many people who are anti-Semites today. I mean, the world has always had anti-Shemites in the sense of Shem means the Hebrew word for name, against the name of Yahweh. And if you're against the name of Yahweh, you're going to be against the name of Yahudah, Judah, which is the basis of Jew, and Yahudim, the people who are related to Yah, the Jews. And so, because they've got Yahweh's name right in the midst of their name. So I don't look at anti-Semite as being as opposed to Shem, because that would include Arabs and others from Mesopotamia. I look at it as the primary meaning of Shem, which is name. And anything that's got Yahweh's name in it. So he who disdains or despises you, even trivializes you, ka'al ata, he who views you as someone to be slighted, belittled, or underestimated, making you of little account, he who diminishes your overall significance, he who dishonors you in any way, as well as those who causes anything associated with you to be seen as simple and easy, and that is underestimated and not taken seriously, I will actually besmirch as disrespectful, and I will continuously incarcerate as inferior or rarer. I will genuinely curse as profane, obscene, and blasphemous. I will designate as embittered. I will forever constrain and condemn as a consequence and a penalty. I will absolutely not bless. Of course, this is serving as an antonym for barak. It's from Ara, to view as inferior and worldly, even as lowly and little, being of the earth and thus insignificant dirt and inconsequential dust. I have, I can tell you that you could simply render this, I will curse those who curse thee. But I think that defining Ka'al and Arar more fully as he who disdains or despises, even trivializes you, and then Arar as I will actually besmirch as disrespectful and I will continuously incarcerate as inferior, gives you a much clearer picture of what's going on here. And, you know, you think about trivializing, minimizing. Well, the third statement that God etched in stone is really about that.
Yes, indeed. You know,
trivializing his name.
Yeah. The original, the oldest I can find on a raw is to, it's a same word for spit. It's when you spit a curse on someone. I mean, this is great disrespect. This is Paul. This is Christianity. This is Islam. I mean, it's just, he's really talking nasty stuff here. I mean, contempt, despise, to reject, to belittle. You can't get any worse, you know. It's just, so, yeah.
Yeah.
He really can't stand this attitude.
No. You know, in the covenant, you either appreciate what Abraham represents and how this discussion with Abraham leads to us being part of Yahweh's family. And you value every word of this discussion. You revel in it. You accept it. You act upon it. You engage in it this way. Or you ignore it or oppose to it or even demean it, as you know Christians will do if you say, I'm in that Old Testament stuff. You know, I'm Old Covenant. I'm looking at what the Torah says about the covenant relationship with Abraham. I can't see where God's changed his mind. You know, they just look at you like, you know, you've got horns growing out of your head.
Yeah.
So,
well, how much more can you make it insignificant? How much more can you make the covenant relationship contract, if you were, between us, Yah and Abraham? How much more can you trivialize it than that? How much more can you despise it than to hate Jews and Abraham? I mean, my God, this is awful.
Yeah, particularly if you look at the kinds of things that we came to see in Islam, where Abraham is turned into a Muslim, or Christianity with Paul saying that there was no Torah, which is the exact opposite of what God says. He said he gave Abraham his Torah, but he says it's just by faith. And you say, why would Abraham have any faith? He met with God 7 times. Ate with him, drank with him. God even took him to heaven. Why would you need faith if God is in your face and talking directly to you? You know, it's like our situation. Why would you need faith if you had all this proof?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It condemns Christianity like the other stuff. By all means, Islam and all, but I mean Christianity. The hard part for me is because I grew up in a Christian family, and I know these people believe this stuff is true that Paul said.
Right. Just, so, the world, I just had a conniption fit over the idea of Jerusalem being named the capital of Israel by the United States, and the world overwhelmingly in the United Nations voted against it.
Yeah.
When God says, and he does, and Yahshua Isaiah, chapter 14, he says all the world's leaders are going to follow Hasatan to Sheol. They're all going to Sheol, no exceptions, all of them. And that's what you see. You see a world where all of the world's leaders are trivializing Israel, trivializing the covenant that Yahweh made with Abraham. Yahweh promised this land to Abraham. To give any of it to anybody else is in direct violation of this. According to God, it's an express ticket to eternal incarceration.
Well, didn't he say, I'm not going to forgive this stuff?
Yeah.
This is, I don't know how much more serious you could be about this.
Yeah, he's laid it out. Why would you expect God to change his mind? Well, why would God draw a line in the sand like this? And then say, hey, well, I'm just kidding.
Or I'm going to give you another option.
Yeah.
I made a mistake. That just didn't work.
Yeah.
Sorry I wasted all your time for, what, 3,000 years?
Yeah, I don't know why I said all that stuff, but I really didn't mean any of it. So, with you...
But I want you to keep all of it around, too. I want you to keep it and ignore it, but...
Right. So, first, if you respect and you act upon and you hold in high regard everything that is associated with Abraham, God's going to hold you in high regard. if you disdain and despise, trivialize the things that God is telling us here about Abraham, then he's going to have you disrespect you. So, with you shall be commended and blessed, reconciled and greeted, all of the people exercising good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes. Through understanding these discussions with Abraham and how Abraham responded to Yahweh is the only means to be reconciled, blessed, commended, and greeted by God. To receive those benefits, you have to exercise good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes, which God has provided through His Torah. The Torah is the means to resolve disputes, and particularly the seven Moed Mikre, and of those, particularly the first two. The first two resolve the disputes. The third adopts us into his family. The fourth is the benefit of empowering and enriching. And the fifth is enabling us to present this as a warning and as a as testimony of the covenant. And of course, the sixth is the ultimate reconciliation of this family that Yahweh is talking about. And the seventh is the destination where we get to camp out with him for all time. So, with you shall be commended and blessed, reconciled and greeted, all of the people experiencing the means to exercise good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes. The mispaka, that's the feminine of mishvat. The extended family who are willing to exercise good judgment, the kindred individuals who are discerning, is from misvot to properly discern the means to resolve disputes, which in turn are from shafat, which is decide judiciously, defending and vindicating everything associated with the land. And again, it's Abraham is never disassociated from the promised land. God isn't just asking us to walk away from our country. He's asking us to walk to a place where we can find him, where he is, that he values.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't walk in any direction away. There's only one direction to walk away.
Yeah. Well, this is where it takes you to be judgmental. And I know you threw out a challenge in this, and when people read this, they'll see where you've written a challenge and saying, it's just, I don't know why these lexicons come up with this. So I went through everything I could. And misfot is there. I mean, they just use it as the last example. I mean, on all my search things, they'll go, Bill, is this, windswept hills, clan families, mispaka, you know, and then you look at every verb, and it says all these different things, but then eventually it is misfot for shafat. Exercising good judgment so you can use your nesama.
To me, it was really simple.
I just couldn't believe you have to jump through many hoops in these lexicons to get to it and why they, I know why they ignored it, because that changes everything.
Right.
Most of these things change everything.
And mishvat and shafat, mishvat is mm-hmm. and shafat are related words.
Yeah. Means to reconcile.
Right.
And then the other is,
right.
Is using good judgments and you choose. So
we've essentially taken mishvat and shafat, which are the combined to discern, to resolve, to choose, to decide, and mishvat the means to resolve disputes. And we have combined them together, which is the basis of mishvat anyway, and we've made it feminine.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but again, you know, I think it's fair to say, all right, the lexicons will give you that as the last choice. They'll throw it in. But it's the last thing they throw in.
Yeah, they cover it up as best they can, hoping you never get there, I guess.
One of the things that's interesting, of course, is that the mishpat is a huge part of Dode's indications as to how to benefit from and observe the Torah. He's constantly talking about the mishpat. And Yahweh constantly is talking about the mishvot. So if he has a word here that is extraordinarily close to mishvot, and it is the means to be greeted by God, to be commended by God, to be blessed by God, to be reconciled by God, don't you think that if the word is extraordinarily close to mishvot, basically the feminine of it, that is what he's talking about? Why would you go anywhere else?
If not, what then? swept
heel. Right. Right.
But clans and family and a windswept heel. No, no.
No. No, I mean,
I tried to give him a
with you shall be commended and blessed, reconciled, and greeted. All of the windswept hill? All of the clan and family? No. All the people exercising good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody ask you to do? Consider?
Right.
Closely examine? Carefully consider?
Right.
And that's Shamar?
Yes. So, you know, again, if the most obvious and the most used and the most consistent is the best fit, what's the justification for going to something trivial?
Mm-hmm. There is none.
I don't think so either. Then I will continue to choose to favor and hold in high regard. Well, I just think that's so wonderful. Those who hold you in high regard. It's just such a marvelous thought process. And by the way, in the chapter on these statements, there is, as you just mentioned, copious analysis. Since every word is important, we take every word and like it's a precious jewel and look at every facet, every potential meaning, every application of it. Right. Yeah, you know, this section right here was probably 10 pages of analysis. The final statement, Barashit 12:4, then Abraham actually continuously walked according to the way Yahweh had expressed in words to him. And walking with him was Lot, and Abraham was a son of 75 years at his departure from Charan. So, if God gave these instructions to Abraham, and Abraham is most certainly the father of the covenant, one of Yahweh's, certainly in the top five of Yahweh's favorite people of all time,
mm-hmm.
and he and Abram actually continuously walked according to the way Yahweh had expressed in words to him, why would we want to do anything different?
No.
Why do you think God would look at the content of your heart if you've chosen to ignore what Abram did?
Good point.
Yeah, it's just really straightforward. You know, and this isn't the first time we've heard that. With Noah. Didn't God say that Noah did everything that Yahweh had instructed him to do?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Isn't this reemphasizing that again? Noah was saved, came a symbol of the covenant because he listened to what Yahweh said, and then he acted upon it, doing everything that God had instructed him to do. And Abram actually and continuously walked according to the way Yahweh had expressed in words to him. Maybe we ought to then look at what were the words that Yahweh expressed to him.
Examine them very closely.
Yeah, and us to walk according to the way of those words.
Uh-huh.
If you want to please God, God's will for your life, do that.
And he'll take care of the rest.
He's busy working for you. If you do that, he will work for you. He'll get down on his knees to lift you up. God is at our service, benefiting us, empowering us, enriching us, working for us, engaging on our behalf when we listen to what he had to say and we act based upon his instructions, his guidance. That's the moral of this story. And Abram at the time, 75 years old, do you think that Abram may have violated the terms and conditions of the covenant a few times prior to the time this, he had this conversation with Yahweh?
Oh, yeah.
I would bet.
Yeah, with the first 75 years, how many times do you think Abram observed Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, Shavua?
I think he missed about 75 times.
Yeah, I think so, too. That would be my guess, 75 times. Right, not one of them.
Mm.
And so we, no matter what time it is in our life,
yes,
so long as we listen to what Yahweh said and act upon what He is encouraging, it doesn't matter how rotten, how many things we've done prior to that time, once we make the decision to act upon what He has instructed. Abram is the example of 75 years old. That's why we're told his age.
It's never too late.
Never too late. Then Yahweh appeared and was seen by Abram, and he said, to your offspring, I will genuinely and continually give this specific land. And there he built for the name an altar to approach Yahweh, who had appeared to him. Now, this is of our receipt in the beginning, Genesis 12:7, second meeting between the two of them. Now, at any point does Yahweh say, tell Abram, my name is Yahweh, I am the creator God of the universe? Does he at any point do something miraculous where it's really flashy and showy? Any of those things ever happen?
No,
both times, he just starts talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't even know in these two occasions. You know, this one, we do know. He appeared. He was seen.
Seen and materialized.
Yahweh materialized before him. Not the entirety of Yahweh, of course. The entirety of Yahweh cannot enter three and a half dimensions.
Diminished.
But a diminished manifestation of Yahweh appeared to Abram. Now, if God had appeared to Abram as this brilliant, light that illuminated the entire hemisphere, you'd have to say, then he'd blind it. Yeah, he'd probably sizzle him.
Yeah.
So he just appeared as an individual to him. Yahweh appeared and was seen by Abram, and he said to him. So it's, again, Yahweh's not flashy. He's not trying to impress anybody. And the reason I think this is important is that while he was visually seen by Abram, most of us, somewhere along the way, have had God speak to us and encourage us to become part of his family, encourage us to listen to him, give us an invitation to get to know him. And that came as a voice, just like the first meeting between Abram and Yahweh. He was not seen by him, it was just a voice. That's how it all begins. Now, if you want to see God and have him appeared to you, we have a means of doing that that I think provides much greater clarity on who Yahweh is and what he's offering than did Abraham.
Yeah, let's go to the Torah.
That's correct. Yeah. The Torah provides us with a much more accurate and complete visual and perspective on who Yahweh is. Because if you could see, let's say that he came down and he was one of the advents of Yahusha, and you could see Yahusha, what is that going to tell you about God's nature? What is it going to tell you about God's power, his plan, his purpose, his way? Does it tell you anything that's helpful to you? He parts his hair on the right side, the left side, long hair, short hair, tall, short individual, bow leg, straight leg, young, old. What does it do? What does a physical presence tell you?
Mm-hmm.
And yet the words of the Torah are extraordinarily revealing. We have a much better perspective on who God is and what he is like and what he is offering and what he expects than did Abraham.
Well, I would add that you have two words, Shama, here, and he could speak to you and you hear him and that may set you going, but
yep.
The next one, when he says, he doesn't say Shama Torah, he says Shamar, and that's when you add that the Rosh at the end, that's the head observing. And you can't observe words unless they're written down.
Right.
So he told you where he wants you to go so you can find out everything you want to do. Plus, you can retain it, you can read it. As I get older, I have worse and worse memory. But I can sit in there and read and read and read and study and study and study and make notes and retain what's important and see everything I don't know about you.
Yeah, and you retain not by just casually reading. You won't retain 5% of what you read casually. You have to interact with what you're reading. You have to look at it, take a note, underline it, write it down, expand on it, examine it, think about it. The whole process of transitioning something from short-term to long-term memory requires that it is that you visualize it, that you exercise it, that you engage with it, that you act upon it. That's how you transfer things to long-term memory. But even then, it's not part of the fabric of your life until you have come to understand it. You've made connections with other things, and you've taken it to the next level where you've transitioned from, I know this, to I understand it. And, of course, you're correct. You can't observe something that's not written down.
Yeah.
Shemar Torah means you've got to read it, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Yahweh appeared and was seen by Abraham. He said to him, to your offspring, La Zerah. Do you think Zerah is singular or plural?
But it's written singular. That is the group.
Yeah, it's written singular. And so, you know, Paul would base the book of Galatians and his big deal about that he wasn't talking about the Torah here, but about a singular individual, Zerah, because it was singular. He said seed was singular. Therefore, it was only, he didn't know his name, but Yosha. He was Iusun, as opposed to Yosha. And he said, that's my point. Seed is singular. So do you think that that God is telling Abram, to your lone offspring, to your one lone child, I'm going to do this? Or it's just like if you told somebody, I want you to go get a bag of seed, not a bag of seed.
Seed is one of those words that there is no plural form. You will never see Zerah in. Every time Zerah is used, it's in a singular form.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Because seed is a plural concept in Hebrew. And it's used in as a plural concept in most languages. A bag of seed contains many seeds. And the Paul's argument was so lame, it's amazing that people were numbskulls enough to buy it. But here again, to your offspring, La Zerah Ata, I will genuinely and continually give Nathan. I will literally offer as a gift, bestowing this specific land. So if you're one of the 90% of the nations of the world, and you say, no, Jerusalem can't be the capital of Israel. It's got to go to those mythical people known as the Palestinians. What do you think God has to say about that? God created the universe, and he gave this as a gift to the descendants of Abraham. So do you think that we're in a position to say, nope, 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 we know better. We're going to give it to the Muslims.
Who are descended from the one child of Abraham that Yahweh
specifically
excluded from the covenant.
Right, absolutely. They're descendants from, they claim that Ishmael is their forefather. And Yahweh said when Abraham said, hey, can Ishmael be part of the covenant? No, absolutely not. No.
That was probably the biggest thing they had in the relationship.
Simple, straightforward answer. One word. No.
No.
He didn't elaborate. He didn't explain. He left it for no interpretation whatsoever. No.
If God tells you no, no, no is the answer. That's just it. No. You notice that wasn't one of the places where Abraham said, well, you know, what if?
Yeah, but you ain't going with it.
Okay. No means no. And there he built it for the name. An altar. So, when it says the name to approach Yahweh, who had appeared to him, therefore the name Yahweh was rather important to Abraham, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He built an altar to the name. He didn't build an altar to worship God. He built an altar to the name of Yahweh. And that's really what we ought to be doing. Not physical altars and ghosts and a bunch of stones, but we ought to value Yahweh's name to the point that it becomes a symbolic altar in our hearts. We can follow Abraham's example here, valuing Yahweh's name to that extent. And it clearly says it was Yahweh who appeared to him. Then he moved from there to the mountain range of Bethel. Bethel means a home of God. From Beth, home and family, El of God, Bethel. And he pitched and spread out his tent, his home, dwelling place, and household, with Bethel toward the sea, and Ai, which was an Amorite city, towards the east. Towards the east, the heap of ruins. Towards the east is Babylon. And there he built an altar to approach Yahweh. Then he actually called out, continuously recited, literally proclaimed, and consistently invited to genuinely meet and to be received of Yahweh. By the name of Yahweh. So he left that one place, went to a new place. He pitched his tent in the house of God. That's a pretty good place to live, I would think. That's what the whole covenant is about, coming to live in the house of God, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's where Abraham went.
Mm-hmm.
Tells you a lot about the land. The land is the house of God. And he pitched his tent there. And in Bethel, out towards the west was the sea. Out to the east, well, you got the Ammonites, you've got the heap of ruins, you've got all the trouble of Babylon and Assyria, all bad stuff in that direction, out to the sea in the west. And there, he built, constructed and established with a family name, Mizbeach, an altar, a place to offer a sacrifice on behalf of and be thankful for the gift of the covenant from Zabok and Zabal. Sacrifice offering on behalf of an honorable and exalted dwelling place. Why? La Yahweh, to approach Yahweh. Then he actually called out, well, Karai is here because the Mikra is the way that we approach Yahweh.
He's told out.
Yeah. So then he actually called out, continuously recited, literally proclaimed, and continually invited to be met with and to be received by the name of Yahweh. Boy, Yahweh's name is really important to him, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He was not having a relationship with a nameless deity. This was not with the Lord. It wasn't with Allah.
Mm-hmm.
This was with Yahweh. And he knew that name was the means to approach. And he also knew that Kara was the right verb. Kara would be the verb that means to summon, to meet with, to proclaim, to announce, to read aloud, to encounter, to be welcomed. What a wonderful verb, Kara.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, please, I implore you. Nah is one of my favorite words, and God uses it all the time. I just amazing. It tickles me to see God using the word "no." Please, I implore you to lift up your eyes and perspective and to choose to look from the place where you are northward, southward, eastward, and westward. So, meeting with Abraham again, he says, okay, I want you to lift up your eyes. Don't bow down. Don't close your eyes. I want you to lift up your eyes. Nasa, one of the most important words in Hebrew. Nasa. Raise and respect. Your eyes, your perspective. I mean, that's the whole thing about becoming part of the covenant, about following the guidance of the Torah, is it changes our perspective.
Mm-hmm.
A relationship with Yahweh changes our perspective on life. So he's telling Abram, I want you to change your perspective. And you're going to change your perspective by lifting up your eyes. Boy, it's not closing your eyes and bowing your head, is it?
Mm-mm.
This is the opposite of that. Open your eyes and lift them up. And I don't want you just to look in one direction. I want to look you all around you. Hey, soak it all in. North, south, east, and west. Now, be observant here. Because all of the land, which to show you the way to the beneficial relationship, Asher, you can see and is being observed by you. I literally and continually am giving it to you and to your descendants, Zerah, as a witness forever. Ad Olam, as testimony for all time, providing evidence for an eternity, memorializing this for an unlimited duration. So why did Yahweh give everything that Abraham could see to Abraham and his descendants?
Because he observed the covenant. He agreed to the covenant.
Yeah.
He loved
Yahweh. Everlasting witness. Yisrael is testimony. If you look at Yisrael, understand what it means, understand Yahweh's relationship with Yisrael, then you understand his witness. His witness is grounded in Yisrael. And if you want to be grafted into the tree of Yisrael, the tree of life, well, you better understand, better have a perspective on what Yisrael represents. And do you think that God was kidding when he said, I'm going to give it to you for all time? Only to say, no, I'm really kidding. I really want those uncircumcised Philistines to have it. No, no, no. Why don't we give it to the United Nations? No, no, no. Let's give it to the Ottoman Empire. No, no. I want the Romans to have it, that beast of Rome. The people that built a temple to Jupiter on the Temple Mount. Let's give it to the Muslims that built the Dome of the Hoofy Print to Satan right there on the Temple Mount. No, I gave it as an eternal gift, as an eternal witness to the descendants of Abraham. That's pretty straightforward. Now, if God says, this is what I have done, what do you think his impression of humans that to say, no, I want to do exactly the opposite. I want to counteract what he has said. God doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's instead do it our way.
Right there.
Yeah, let's have a two-state solution. No, there can't be a two-state solution. There is no solution that's counter to God's promises.
I've never seen Olam translated anyway but forever. So how?
Yeah.
So you just ignore it? I mean.
Right.
I know
it's Ad Olam, and people. Ad is indistinguishable from Ad, and Ed in Hebrew means witness. It means
upright pole.
Testimony.
Edon.
Yeah. And so this is Ad Olam, so it's the eternal testimony, the eternal witness. There is no other rendering of Ad or Olam that can be justified. I'm giving this to your descendants as a witness forever. I'm not giving it to you so you have the most contested piece of property on earth. I'm giving it to you because Yisrael and what's going to occur there is where my testimony to humankind is going to be. Do we find Yahweh offering any prophetic insights outside of Yisrael? I mean, yes, we did receive the Torah from outside of Yisrael.
Yeah.
But
they carried it back in.
But they carried it back in.
It was all about what to do once they entered.
Yeah, and it was all about what to do once you get there. Mm-hmm. And about how I want, I'm taking away from the powers and the influence of the Gentile world, taking away from religion, politics, militarism to this place. And then everything else was revealed in that place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the place of eternal witness.
And it plays out the end there. Yeah.
Right. Everything he said thereafter was presented in Israel. Now, the only exception to that is Revelation was given to a Udim named Yahuhanan on an island outside of Israel. But from what I can tell, to the degree that Revelation is accurate, it was given to Yahuhanan in Shamayim, in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So heaven counts as a
God's place.
God's place. So that wasn't given to him a place outside of Israel. It was given to him in Shamayim, which is the ultimate manifestation of Israel. Marvelous, straightforward. I think we've only come across two or three words that are challenging to translate, and that was the ones, that are amplification of "I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee." The more complex, comprehensive analysis of that was really the only place where you had words, and particularly the variation of Mishpat, where there was some controversy on the words. The rest of it, there's no controversy here.
Yeah, well, the Christians created the controversy, not God.
Right. And you've gone through each of these words. This chapter is one of your favorites, Kirk.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough to find an argument with it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, God talks very plainly. Unless you really want to twist it, or you're not paying attention, then he says what he means, and he means what he says. It's pretty straightforward.
Yes, yes.
I'm giving this to you. These are the terms and the conditions. You have to be a doer.
Right.
You have to do it of your own volition. You have to make the choice. I greatly encourage you, but you have to make the choice.
It's what I want. I hope you do it.
I hope you do it.
For you.
I want to be part. I want you to be part of my family. I'll lift you. I'll take care of you all the way.
And thus far,
come on,
let's go.
Calling you out.
Of Abram, the things that he's offering to do on his behalf outnumber them a gazillion to one, and the things that he's asked Abram to do, for the most part, Abram's already done.
Mm-hmm.
He's walked away from his company, walked away from that
society
of Babylon and the whole concept of Babylon, and his father's dead. He's walked away from his father's house. And he's walked towards the land that Yahweh has given him and pitched a tent there. He's listened to and acted upon everything Yahweh said. At this point, Yahweh hasn't asked Abraham to do diddly squat that Abraham didn't already intend to do. And he's made all these promises to him. This is really I always say in business that unless a deal is good for both parties, it's not a good deal. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a deal where God is asking essentially nothing of Abraham and offering him everything. And even with us, well,
do these
he is
things,
asking
we're going to benefit you anyways.
Right.
And I'll give you all this on top of that.
Yeah. In our case, he is asking something for us because when we meet him, we probably still have one foot in Babylon. We probably still have some allegiances.
Yeah.
We're just beginning our journey away from religion and politics and militarism mm-hmm. and the like. And so with us, there is something to actually do, but it's in our benefit. Trusting something that's not trustworthy is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so disassociating with it is a good idea. So everything he asks of us, from us, is actually in our best interest. And then we get all these benefits. It's the best deal ever offered anyone. I mean, the covenant is the best deal ever offered by anyone to anyone. Well, fellas, we are still recording, but we are now no longer broadcasting, and I'm still struggling with my cough, so it probably is best that we say an hour and a half was good.
I think it's a good stopping point anyway.
Listen, we're at a good stopping point. I'll make a note here. This is where we have ended, and we've got so much more to say about Abraham, and of course, it doesn't get complicated. It doesn't get difficult. It doesn't. There's no controversy here. It's really straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing more important than than these instructions. These are the single most important instructions ever given to humankind. And God specifically is saying,
right here,
if you do these, right here. If you act upon these things, this is what I'm going to do for you.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to act upon them. Thank you very much.
If this don't turn you on, I don't know what'll turn you on.
Yes. Yeah. This is finding out what God's will is for your life on a silver platter.
You want to know? Here it is. Everybody always says it, but here it is.
Yes, here it is. All right, fellas, before my throat gets out and my voice does, I bid you good night. Thank you very much.
Good night.
It was,
have a good one. Good night, baby. See you next week.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good night, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.